Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we talk about theology, apologetics, how to explain and defend our Catholic faith. But on Fridays, I like to just cut loose and have fun and talk about whatever interests me. And to be frank, a lot of things in the world right now are stressful. They're anxiety-inducing. And I know there's lots of people who are talking about all the things and current events that are going on. But sometimes I appreciate, and I think you appreciate here on Free for All Friday, we can just talk about fun stuff. We can unplug a little bit from everything that's going on in the news and learn something new or just have a lot of fun together. So a lot of times what we discuss are light topics here on Free for All Friday. Sometimes they're heavy topics. Ah, wow, that's heavy, Doc. Heavy? Is there something wrong with your gravitational pull, Marty? Movies. And that's what I want to talk about today. I've watched a lot of movies in my life. When I was in high school, I would stay up late with friends, not do homework, and watch movies. I would, in college, do the same thing. I remember in college, actually, I did my ancient Greek homework. As I was driving to school, I would scribble out the answers on the worksheets while I was driving, and I'd have the worksheets up on my steering wheel. So I was someone who really prioritized time with friends in high school and college. Going out and getting together with everybody and watching movies. I've watched a fair amount. I studied film and television, actually, at Scottsdale Community College. That's where I did my first 2 years, the Fighting Artichokes. And I got an associate's degree with an emphasis in film and television production. So I'm a big film goer. We had a movie appreciation class there. So I've seen a lot of films. And there are some films that I have seen that I would consider are severely underrated. I think they're really good films that a lot of people don't give them enough credit or they don't remember them. They've sort of become cult classics or almost cult classics. These are films when they first debuted, they were oftentimes they might have been commercial flops or critical flops or both, that people just didn't appreciate how good they were when they came out, and then they faded away. So I want to bring them back for you. So that's what I want to talk about today here on the podcast. Several severely underappreciated and underrated movies. A bit of a caveat, though. These movies range on the appropriateness meter. Some of them do contain what you could say are morally offensive elements. So you have to be discerning in what you would watch here. I wouldn't say there's anything beyond the pale, but everybody has different sensibilities. Some of these are rated G or PG, and some are rated R, usually for violence, profanity, some elements of sexuality. But as I said, I don't recall anything being really beyond the pale in these films. So if you choose to watch them, note the movie rating for the film and use your best judgment to discern it. I think you can go online, actually, if you're really concerned about scenes surprising you or for your children. I recommend a website called Screen It. I think it's still up. You could go there and it listed all the possibly offensive elements in films for parents to review, and it would do it in a way that didn't spoil the plot. It would say, like, this person did this act of violence, or a person does this act of sexuality, without saying the character's name, so it doesn't spoil for you. I'm pretty sure it's still up. It's called Screen It, and parents can go there to review films before they decide to show it to their children if they choose to not watch the films themselves. So let's get started. So that's just my caveat. If you're going to watch these films, use your best judgment. Some of them are obviously family friendly. Others, you know, are not family appropriate. So once again, follow the ratings, use your best judgment. Starting off, the first on our list, I'm going to do these in chronological order when they were released in theaters, is The Rocketeer, debuted in 1991, a Disney film, actually. And I remember this film, I saw it a few years after it came out. I was probably like 9 or 10 years old, and I just loved it. So this film, set in 1938, Los Angeles, California, The Rocketeer tells the story of stunt pilot Cliff Secord, who stumbles upon a hidden rocket-powered jetpack that he thereafter uses to fly without the need of an aircraft. His heroic deeds soon attract the attention of Howard Hughes and the FBI, who are hunting for the missing jetpack, as well as the Nazi operatives that stole it from Hughes. Starring Bill Campbell, Jennifer Connelly, Alan Arkin, Timothy Dalton, Paul Sorvino, and Tiny Ron Taylor. The film is based upon the character of the same name created by comic book artist and writer Dave Stevens. So The Rocketeer is basically Iron Man, but if you put it in the late 1930s, and instead of fighting terrorists in the Middle East, it's fighting Nazis. So imagine if you combined Captain America and Iron Man. If you put that together, you would have The Rocketeer, I would say. And I love this film. I love the atmosphere because it's set in the late 30s in Los Angeles. So what's so great about it? You've got Zeppelins, Nazi Zeppelins, classy Los Angeles dinner clubs. You got Moxie, you got gangsters, classy ladies, biplanes, people doing stunts and biplanes flying around. I just love the atmosphere that is created in this film. It just really inspires a kind of fantasy notion with you, but it's set in a very historical setting. Also, the villain is really good. So Timothy Dalton plays the villain. He plays an actor in Los Angeles who is secretly working with the Nazis. So he's like a Nazi undercover agent in Hollywood. And Timothy Dalton's got the mustache. He's got the British accent, but he's secretly working for the Nazis. And he's just a great villain in this role. And what's funny about it is his character seems to be inspired by a real life Hollywood actor, Errol Flynn. In fact, he looks a lot like Errol Flynn. Flynn was at his height in the late 1930s and the 40s. And he was a swashbuckling actor, though people later claimed, they made speculations, that he was actually working with the Nazis. It says here, in 1980, author Charles Higham wrote a highly controversial biography, Errol Flynn, The Untold Story, alleging that Flynn was a fascist sympathizer who spied for the Nazis, and that he was bisexual and had multiple same-sex affairs. He claimed Flynn arranged to have the movie Dive Bomber filmed at a naval base in order to benefit Japanese military planners who needed information on American warships. And so, however, subsequent biographers of Errol Flynn have said that Higgins' allegations have no evidence to corroborate them. And so this really besmirched his career, actually. These accusations that Flynn was a Nazi seem to be pretty unsubstantiated. Though it's interesting that the character Timothy Dalton in The Rocketeer, it looks almost exactly like Flynn. That's what they were going for. So two elements here to show why I love this so much. First, James Horner is the composer who did the music for The Rocketeer, and it is just so good. It is so good. To give you an example, here's a little bit of the soundtrack where they're playing in part of the movie. And it just, the word that describes the music in this is whimsy. It makes you want to go out and fly. Fly a biplane, fly a jetpack. See what I mean? Okay, so that's the scene like when they're, you know, starting the movie and you're wheeling out the biplanes and it's the 30s, everyone's dressed classy. Doesn't that music make you want to just look up at the sky? Like when you listen to that music, I bet you tilted your head up a little bit when you were doing that. That is the power of music. When you're looking, when you're watching a film, 60, I would say more than 50%, 60% of what affects you when you watch a film is the audio. If a film or a video has bad audio, it's going to be terrible. The audio is more than 50%. So great music, great audio recording, sound effects, that is more than half of what makes a film great, in my opinion, at least when you're talking about modern motion pictures. And then to give you an idea to see where the audio overplays and continues that, here is a scene from the end of The Rocketeer at the climactic showdown at Griffith Observatory, where the bad guys seem to be getting away in the Nazi Zeppelin, and the FBI agents think that all hope is lost. And look who's standing on top of the observatory next to an American flag. It's the Rocketeer firing off to go and stop the bad guys.
Maybe not. Look.
Up on the dome. It's him. It's the Rocketeer.
Go get him, kid.
Go get him, kid. What's great about The Rocketeer is that it made really good use of the nascent technology of CGI, computer-generated imagery. This is 1991, still a few years before Jurassic Park, and they did a good job with the flying sequences, actually. They still hold up even after, you know, 30 years later. All right, here's the next one. Not as family-friendly, but still a good film. Falling Down, the 1993 film Falling Down, directed by Joel Schumacher, which is funny. A lot of people give Joel Schumacher a hard time because he did Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, which were just terrible adaptations of the Batman source material. And people thought like, oh, this is just kiddie or this is over the top and goofy. But Schumacher actually directed Falling Down, which is not a kiddie movie in any sense of the word. The film stars Michael Douglas in the lead role of William Foster, a divorced and unemployed former defense engineer. The film centers on Foster as he treks on foot across the city of Los Angeles, trying to reach the house of his estranged ex-wife in time for his daughter's birthday. So basically, Douglas is on the freeway, his car is stuck, his air conditioning isn't working. This is of the genre of the bad day, of just the hero or the anti-hero, if you will, descending into madness. The closest analog to Falling Down would be actually the modern film Joker, starring Joaquin Phoenix, that the main character is not a good guy. The protagonist is actually an anti-hero. You're kind of rooting for him, but you realize he's not a morally superior individual. He's morally neutral, or he has severe, severe character flaws as he tries to move the movie forward. In fact, there's a famous scene later in the movie where he's confronted by a police officer and Douglas says, "I'm the bad guy?" And so basically, he just one bad thing happened. He leaves his car during this heat wave. He's walking across LA trying to get home. And it's just one bad encounter after another. He goes to a convenience store to try to get change for a phone call, and he buys a Coke and gives the clerk a dollar, and he only gets 15 cents back. Well, the clerk won't even give him change. He says, "You got to buy something. I won't give you change." And so he's just getting more and more agitated, and finally he just snaps at the system, and he takes a bat from the clerk, and he breaks up the store. And then he continues to go, and he goes to a weapons store and ends up getting a gun from a guy and ends up killing him in the process. And then he just kind of goes on this rampage and makes all these comments about how everything in the world is just broken. Like, you have city construction crews who are working on roads for no reason. So he takes the rocket launcher he got from an army surplus store and blows up the road. And he ends up at a fast food restaurant and he just wants to order a sandwich. He just wants to get a breakfast sandwich. He wants breakfast, and it's a few minutes past 11:30. And so he can't get breakfast. And then that is just too much for him. We've all been there, right? You wanted to order breakfast and it's like 1 minute past. This is before the days of all day breakfast at McDonald's. You know, I think maybe McDonald's is like, we don't need a Falling Down situation. We'll do all day breakfast. Because that was the worst, right? You would show up at McDonald's 2 minutes late and they stop serving the Egg McMuffin. Well, here's that famous scene in Falling Down where he just wants breakfast.
Rick, have you ever heard the expression, the customer is always right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, here I am, the customer.
That's not our policy. You have to order something from the lunch menu.
I don't want lunch. I want breakfast.
Yeah, well, hey, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, well, hey, I'm really sorry, too.
I got a gun!
Calm down. Just calm down, everybody. Just sit down. Sit down over there. Hey, 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 hey.
Mister, where are you going?
No, 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 no. You sit down there and you finish your lunch. Come on. Everybody just relax and take it easy.
And so then he gets mad, he orders the food, and he points out how the food doesn't look anything like the pictures at the restaurant. So this isn't just some kind of a crime thriller. It's really a commentary on the metaphorical impotence of middle-aged men. So not the physical impotence, but metaphorical impotence. That of men of a certain age and demographic, life always cuts against them the wrong way. Like, he lost custody of his daughter for no good reason in the film. And, you know, he lost his job for no good reason. And it seems like the world's just conspiring against him. And so it's a commentary on that. And it's just interesting to see him engage that, and then the play, how it plays off of the other main character, which is Officer Prendergast, played by Robert Duvall. So Falling Down, really neat film in that regard. Here is the next one, a year later. So all these films that are underappreciated, I think they're films that I probably saw as a kid. I don't remember seeing Falling Down as a kid. I shouldn't have seen Falling Down as a kid. But films that I saw as a kid in the 1990s, that still stuck with me. So the next one is Clifford, the 1994 American black comedy film Clifford, directed by Paul Flaherty and starring Martin Short, Charles Grodin, Mary Steenburgen, and Dabney Coleman. So the plot is about a 10-year-old boy who is really kind of a sociopath. And he's traveling with his parents to Hawaii, and he desperately just wants to go to Los Angeles to go to Dinosaur World because he's obsessed with dinosaurs. So he causes their plane to be rerouted to LA by sneaking into the cockpit under false pretenses and nearly crashes it. And then he ends up, his parents are just sick of him. They leave him with his uncle, Charles Grodin. You remember Charles Grodin was the dad in the movie Beethoven. You remember the movie about the guy who adopts the big St. Bernard Beethoven? So Charles Grodin is his uncle, and he has to watch him, And more the boy, Clifford, ends up sabotaging his life because he just desperately wants to go to Dinosaur World because he's a 10-year-old boy obsessed with dinosaurs. Now, here's what makes the movie, okay? This would be another forgettable film about, you know, the child who wreaks havoc, the disaster child, like Dennis the Menace. It would be another forgettable film like that, except for one fact. The boy, Clifford, is played by 40-year-old actor Martin Short. That is what makes Clifford hilarious to watch even today, because Martin Short does a great job. He does a better job playing a hyperactive, sociopathic 10-year-old than any 10-year-old could ever do. He gets all the mannerisms right. Like, he has this little dinosaur with him. Stefan, why wouldn't Uncle Martin take us to Dinosaur World? Uncle Martin, I didn't mean to do it. It was Stefan. Stefan told me to do it. That Stefan is the name of his dinosaur. And the mannerisms, what he does, I see those same things in my 5-year-old son. It wasn't me. It was the dinosaur that made me do it. So he does an amazing job in that regard of acting and overacting to chew up the scenery. And to compliment it, Charles Grodin plays it completely straight. He never breaks character. He always treats Clifford, Martin Short's character, as if he really were a 10-year-old boy. And so it makes the film work in that regard. So here is a clip where Clifford finds out they're driving in a car, and Clifford finds out they're not going to Dinosaur World after all. And Clifford grabs the wheel and demands that they go instead.
I can't take you right now!
Turn back, Uncle Martin! The freeway to Dinosaur World is not there!
No, you're gonna make us rush!
Then so be it! Help me, Stefan! Make it all better somehow!
Get a hold of yourself! You're out of control! What? What?
A whole gang of chocolate! I need it badly!
So if you want a comedy film that's kind of weird to be in the genre of black comedy, I recommend the 1994 film Clifford. All right, next up, a year later, 1995, a Goofy movie. So this is the most family-friendly of the films here on the list. So a Goofy movie, think about Disney, the Disney character Goofy. Oh, yuck, oh, yuck. You know, Mickey, Donald, Goofy. Back in the early 90s, there was a cartoon called Goof Troop. So it was about Goofy and his teenage son, Max. So a Goofy movie follows Goofy and his son, Max, who is now in high school, and revolves around the father-son relationship between the two as Goofy takes Max on a fishing trip out of fear that Max is drifting away from him, unintentionally interfering with Max's social life, particularly his relationship with Roxanne, his high school crush. So what happens in the film is that Max interrupts an assembly, and he does this dance dressed up as this celebrity in their world called Powerline, which is kind of like a Michael Jackson-esque singer and performer. He gets in trouble with the principal. Goofy is worried that his son is going to go off the rails, takes him on a fishing trip where he's going to miss going to a party with Roxanne. So he tells a lie. He says, well, the reason I can't go to the party with you is because my dad is taking me to the Powerline concert. So he tells this lie, and he tries to get his dad throughout the rest of the trip to see secretly take him to the Powerline concert to get on stage and impress Roxanne. Now, for most of the movie, it's about Max and Goofy doing father-son bonding and trying to understand one another. Max doesn't get his Goofy dad. Goofy doesn't understand his teenager son with his mood swings. But as the movie progresses, what I love about the conflict is that it's not a fantasy, it's not a fairy tale, it's not an over-the-top thing. The conflict is just about a father and son trying to understand one another. That's it. So I love the lesson that comes from it, that even if they don't fully understand one another, they can fully love one another and accept their father-son relationship. So at the end, they pull it all together. Goofy gets them to the Powerline concert, and they sneak on stage. Goofy ends up on stage, and he's dancing with Powerline, who is voiced by Tevin Campbell. And the songs that he sings in this film, I would say they deserve to be on the radio. They are that good. The Tevin Campbell songs in a Goofy movie are easily on par with Michael Jackson. Okay, so first, here's the beginning of the song that he sings. It has a real Michael Jackson vibe to it, right? So it's good. So if you want a family-friendly, underappreciated film, I recommend A Goofy Movie. All right, two more. Now we're going to fast forward from the 90s to the 2010s for two films I've really enjoyed that many people have not heard of, but I think that you'll like them. The first one is the 2012 film Troll Hunter. This is a Norwegian found footage mockumentary. So it's like Blair Witch Project. It's about, you know, people who claim to be doing a documentary and they're following a guy into the woods who they think is a troll hunter and they want to expose him. But it turns out trolls are real. I mean, trolls are a big deal in Norwegian folklore. It received positive reviews from Norwegian critics, and people here in the U.S. have enjoyed it as well. Now, it's completely in Norwegian, so if you don't like watching films where you have to read subtitles, you won't like Troll Hunter. But what's nice about it is they fully lean into the premise, and you do see the trolls. The trolls aren't, like, hidden or anything like that. They don't pop up at the very end. You see the trolls in all their glory, and they're done actually pretty well. So here's just a clip of it to get an idea of what the film sounds like if you're just listening to people doing essentially a kind of Norwegian Blair Witch Project, but with trolls. Here's the trailer. He's saying, like, turn off that camera, you. Do you think Michael Moore gave up after his first try? And so that gives me an idea of what the language sounds like. In fact, there's actually a video on YouTube. It's what does English sound like to non-English speakers? So when we hear Norwegian or a Scandinavian language, what does it sound like to us? It sounds like the Swedish chef from Sesame Street, not to offend any of my Scandinavian listeners. But if I had to repeat it, it'd sound like, that's what it sounds like. So there's actually a video on YouTube about what English sounds like to people who don't understand English. So let me play a clip of that. And keep in mind, they're not speaking English. They're speaking gibberish, but in a way for you to understand. If you don't know what English, if you can't understand English words, these are what the words and the cadence and the vocabulary sounds like to a non-English speaker.
Parkin here.
Natson.
Oh, hey, Natson. What's in a hashu?
Paddingin.
Lining, panning, barbiting, the minimus, hey?
Anemonic. What's hard with the head note?
It's carpetable. Hash and Garts, actually. Tracy Palin not having it since, like, 4 days while I was with soap and an ottoman or something. It was palatable.
Tracy was in Normacon?
Yeah, Ashton part, though. Mandolin, that older Comey dorm dot. Yeah, that heart, the actual placency, and over it was draped, like, six or something. I mean, strange me out, and it was...
It's, carpetable. So, if you notice, there were actually some real English words in there, but it's gibberish. They're not saying anything. But just as, like, if you were listening to Spanish, you'd be able to recite some of the words that you heard. But if you don't understand Spanish, it would all blend together. Notice that English, it sounds a bit like German, which makes sense because English is a Germanic language. So, it has that kind of staccato quality to it. But I love how they space it out and the way people speak. That is what English sounds like, the non-English speakers. So, anyways, Troll Hunter 2012. If you want a Norwegian fantasy film about trolls done in the Blair Witch style found footage mockumentary, completely in Norwegian, I recommend. It's pretty good. And our last one on the list is Edge of Tomorrow, the 2014 film Edge of Tomorrow, marketed as Live, Die, Repeat Edge of Tomorrow, though it's usually just called, I think, Live, Die, Repeat Now. They even had trouble what to title the film to get people to watch it, because Edge of Tomorrow sounds bland. Live, Die, Repeat gets you closer to what the film was about, but it's an American science fiction action film starring Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. The film takes place in a future where most of Europe is invaded by an alien race. Major William Cage, played by Tom Cruise, a public relations officer with no combat experience, is forced by his superiors to join a landing operation against the aliens. So what happens is Tom Cruise ends up killing one of these aliens in this beach landing invasion operation, and it splatters goo on him, and these aliens can kind of control time. So when this particular alien dies and gets the goo on Tom Cruise, it causes him to reset the day to be in a time loop. So every time he dies, his day resets. So if I could describe this film, it's basically Groundhog Day meets Saving Private Ryan, because the battle is they're all on this open beach shooting machine guns, and the soldiers walk out in these cool mecha armored suits, and they go out there, and a lot of them get slaughtered by aliens, and it's just pure havoc and craziness. But every time Tom Cruise dies, he resets the day, and he starts to figure this out and develops a plan with Emily Blunt, who is another soldier, to find a way to break the loop and beat the aliens. So at one point they get away from the battlefield and they end up going to the general's office to try to explain this to him, but every time they explain it, they get dragged off to the loony bin, and so they end up committing suicide to reset the day when they have to, because every time they die, the time loop resets. So here's a scene to get the idea of the Groundhog Day element in it, but I love the interaction here where they've been at this trying to explain it to the general so long, they're able to have kind of a Groundhog Day scene with him.
Before I died, I killed a mimic, only this one was different. It passed something on to me in my blood. Now I live the same day over and over again, just like they do. Just like Sergeant Vertaski at Verdun. Tell your secretary everything's fine.
I beg your pardon?
I'm sorry, General. I thought you were alone.
It's fine.
She typed up those orders for you to authorize, but she left out the ones referring to the fuel dump at Greenwich. Your name is Iris. Your birthday is September 17th. The General quietly pulled some strings, stationed your only son in Australia as far from the war as possible. Tell the General his dinner's just been canceled. The call came in just now.
Your dinner was canceled.
You forgot the fuel dump. Thank you, artist. That'll be all.
So here's what I really like about this film. I showed it to Laura because I said, hey, here's an action film I think you'll really like. And she actually loved it. So if you're a couple that want to have a really cool action film, this is one to watch together. And I said to Laura, I said, what I love about this film is that this film perfectly encapsulates what it's like to play a video game, especially an old school like Nintendo or Super Nintendo video game, especially like Nintendo, where if you died, you had to start all the way back at the beginning again. So every time you die, you have to go through all those levels over and over again. And then finally, you can keep going. But it's grueling. You do the same thing over and over and over, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And you die and respawn over and over again. And I said, this is just like a video game. And I was right that that's what they were going for in the film. It says here that the director said the film's repeated scenes intentionally paralleled the respawning features in video games. In the afterword of the novel that this is based on, All You Need Is Kill, author Hiroshi Sakurazawa notes his experience playing video games as a source of inspiration while writing the novel. So I thought this was just really interesting. I thought it was just fascinating. Another underappreciated film in 2014, film Edge of Tomorrow. So I hope you like those. And if you have an underappreciated film you'd like me to comment on or maybe see myself, be sure to write it in the comment section at trendhornpodcast.com. If you're a subscriber, if you're a patron, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to bonus content, one of those being the exclusive ability to comment on episodes. So if you have an underappreciated film you want to share with me and you're a patron, go to trendhornpodcast.com or become a patron and join our community there. Thank you guys so much. I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.